Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and today on In Season, I am so happy to welcome Luke Colvin of Arbor Care Tree Specialists, and we're going to talk about trees. Welcome, Luke.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Teresa.
I'm so glad that you're here. Trees are such a part of our life here in our region. I mean, you kind of can't escape it. This is not an arid desert. We are a very tree, rainforesty kind of place. And I think, you know, when you live here, you live among the trees. And you work among the trees a lot. And I wanted to start with asking a little bit about how you came to being an arborist as a career, and maybe also talk a little bit about your connections here to the North Coast.
Yeah, I grew up here in Astoria, and my family has been here since the 40s. When I was 12 years old, my immediate family moved to Portland, and I wasn't a really successful traditional student and ended up getting
many
out
of us were not.
Correct. And got out of high school a little bit early, got my GED, and had been rock climbing since I was 15, and got an opportunity to start working for a tree service in 1997 when I was 17, and seemed like a natural transition, even though it ended up not being, but started working for a tree service when I was 17, fell in love with the arboriculture industry, worked there until I was 19, and then eventually in 2000 moved back to Astoria and bounced around doing a few different things, but eventually in 2004 followed through on a dream of starting my own tree service here in Astoria.
So from rock climbing to tree climbing, I can see the connection, how that would lead. I mean, because that is something, honestly, I will tell you, I am not a tree climber. This, the thought of like climbing up into trees, absolutely terrible. And I'm not a rock climber either. But I'm so amazed at the bravery and the ability to climb these tall trees and understand how they work and how to find that next foothold. And
yeah, it's intimidating for a lot of people, but same goes for rock climbing and tree climbing. You can make it as dangerous as you want, or you can make it as safe as you want.
So, did you climb trees as a kid?
Oh, yeah. We had an apple orchard, or still do, actually. My wife and I, Melissa, live on the property I grew up in. And as a younger brother, the apple trees were one of the best defenses to try to escape my older brother.
Nice. That's true. So now you live out in Olney, which is where our farm is, and it's such a great community. So the property that you live on, is that's family property that has been in your family since the 40s?
Yeah. My grandparents moved here in the 40s. And then as their children grew older, they split some of the property off, and the house that we live in is the house I grew up in.
So, oh, nice. That's got to be a good connection.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's amazing to really feel like you're part of a piece of property and you have family history there for sure.
I know, and it feels really cheesy saying this, but it's, you have deep roots in this community. I'm sorry about that, but it's true. I mean, I think that connection really comes through in the work that you do. So did you have to go through training to become certified as an arborist? I mean, it's different than just, you know, me saying, hey, I'll come over to your house and prune your tree for you. Sure, I kind of know what I'm doing, and I've got a pole pruner, versus what you do. So talk a little bit about the certification and what an arborist is.
Well, initially, most of my education experience came on the job, but then right just after I started ArborCare, I saw the value and really the opportunity to go back and get certified. There wasn't any certified arborists in the area.
Really?
Yeah. Well, as far as practicing tree service, being ran by a certified arborist, there was just a lot of ex-loggers and, and people out of the woods who do have a lot of knowledge, but just not necessarily a lot of the technical knowledge of the biology of the tree and just the general knowledge of arboriculture. But anyway, went back and studied and got a little bit more formal education, got my arborist certification in 2007, I believe. I'd have to confirm that. And then it's just a process of, because arboriculture is a living science and a developing, progressing science, you just have to keep up with the continual education to maintain that certification.
So do you go to conferences or different
workshops, annual training conferences, and each different topic will have a certain number of continual education credits.
So you're not just looking at like how to prune a tree, but it's about the entire biology, the ecosystem of that tree, you know, from the soil, the roots, everything.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people really focus on above ground care, which is definitely important, especially here on the Oregon coast where we do deal with some pretty adverse weather conditions. But it's just as important to focus on, like you mentioned, the soil conditions, the health and the stability of the roots.
Yeah.
You know, where trees get their anchorage is from the ground down.
What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that, you know, homeowners make? I mean, I think about someone who, you know, goes to a nursery and they see this beautiful little tree in a, you know, 1 gallon size pot, and they're like, oh, I really want to plant that. And they plant it, you know, right next to their house, and then it either grows into this monster or it's totally inappropriate. You know, how do you, you know, do you see a lot of that, of people not really understanding what's an appropriate tree for the appropriate place?
Of course, there is the sayings in agriculture, right tree, right place. And, you know, picking the right species with the proper genetic potential and then planting it in the appropriate location on your property is very important.
I can really see how that would be, you know, something that you don't always think through. And again, trying to visualize how big a tree is going to become. You know, I've just started planting apple trees on our property, and I'm, you know, understanding like, okay, spacing and, you know, the eventual size of the tree is going to be this, but it's still, there's this little tiny twig, and it's hard to imagine it getting that big. So there's a tendency to plant things closer maybe than you think, because you think, oh, it's, you know, it can't possibly get that big, or it's not going to compete. And yet then, you know, 10 years from now, I'm going to really see problems if I don't pay attention to that proper spacing.
Well, in all honesty, a lot of people don't even think about it. They like you said, they go to the nursery and they see this great tree, whether it's a conifer or a deciduous, and they don't even look at the tag on it.
Giant sequoia.
Exactly.
That would be really great in my downtown house. You know?
Yeah, and you know, obviously it depends on the property, but like we were talking about earlier, it's like if you like to garden, you know, planting trees along the eastern or the southern side of your property probably is not going to be the best choice, because it's going to block a lot of light. You know, planting on the northern or the western side of the property is, you know, it's probably more appropriate. If you're really close to the ocean, you know, there's not a lot of trees that will do really well with a lot of exposure to the ocean. But if you want to, you know, block some of the wind to your home, obviously planting on the south and west sides is going to be more appropriate. So just really knowing what you want, what the tree is that you're planting, and just doing the education of putting it in the right spot is extremely important. And then, of course, when you come into a property with established trees, not to sound redundant, but, you know, as we mentioned, the health of the soil and the root system is extremely important. And, you know, even driving small vehicles or small pieces of equipment or lawnmowers over root systems can have a really detrimental effect on the health and then subsequently the stability of the tree.
How do you determine how big a root system is for a tree? I mean, is it kind of like as it is above ground, it is below ground? Is that,
that's,
I mean,
that's a general rule, you know, it's called the drip line theory. So, you know, and it goes from species to species.
Yeah.
Each different tree is going to have a different growth pattern of the root system. But a general rule as far as the critical root zone of a tree is within the drip line.
Yeah.
Certainly there's going to be times, you know, managing the urban interface with trees is a balance. But, you know, there's going to be times that you're going to encroach on that root system. But what's important is just knowing what your prevailing wind directions are. You know, if you're going to have a negative impact on one side, try to not have it on multiple sides. And just give, you know, trees are smart. If you create less than ideal conditions in one area, the tree will start growing in other more attractive soil types or areas that get more water, so on and so forth. So just making the impact as little as possible on the root system through developing your property is important. You value those trees.
You were talking earlier and about the challenges and the frustrations for you as an arborist, that in some communities where, you know, construction is allowed to happen near trees, You know, you could, if you have an established tree on your property and you want to put in a garage right next to it, you know, you can get excavators in there to dig up next to it, damage the roots, do all kind of damage, build that thing, and then, you know, a few years later be shocked that that tree is suffering and potentially dying, and now you've got to come in and try and remove that tree. What, you know, how do you think communities could address that better? I mean, not that I want to call out any community, but Cannon Beach.
No.
You have some issues.
I wouldn't want to, you know, throw them under the bus by any means, but...
It's frustrating because you said they have a tree removal ordinance.
Yeah, well, the people of, you know, the residents of Cannon Beach have supported, you know, really protecting their trees, and, you know, there's been more focus on... you know, or less focus in the construction process in the past. And I think mm-hmm. that the policy is catching up. How to address it better, I'm definitely not a policymaker by any means. It's just, you know, once again, just really focusing on protecting the root systems mm-hmm. of the trees through construction and protecting the above ground. Both components are just as important.
So maybe as homeowners, you can be aware that if you want to have construction happen on your property and you've got established trees, that's something to talk to your contractor about. Like, what's the plan for protecting this tree? If you want that tree to stay healthy and you don't want to eventually have to have it removed, you've got to think about its root system.
Well, absolutely.
That it just can't take repeated impact to its root system and then be expected to live and thrive.
Yeah, correct. You know, and not to be derogatory to any developer or contractor, but, you know, a lot of them, it's not their profession and they're not aware of it. So if you're developing a property with trees, you know, finding an arborist, whether it be myself or another one of the handful of options here in the Northern Oregon coast, coming in and having a partnership between your developer, your contractor, and your arborist to create a root protection policy through the construction process, you know, and a lot of people, they'll say, well, we impacted our trees and, you know, look, they're doing great. Well, you know, the residual effect, you know, unless you've just severely damaged the tree, lots of times construction stress won't show up for 10, 12, 15 years. And people think, oh, well, you know, 5 years down the road, the tree still looks great. It's like, well, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to in another 5-10 years.
Trees have a different time schedule.
Yeah,
than we do.
Trees do things very slowly.
Yeah, they do.
It's got to be pretty dramatic circumstances for a tree to react to anything quickly.
Yeah, that's one thing I know that they do react quickly to are extreme weather events, and I just wanted to touch briefly on that. I didn't want to focus on, you know, storm damage and all of that, but it was kind of ironic that yesterday, the day before we recorded the show. I woke up and it was a stormy, windy early morning out in Olney, and our power went out, and it was out for over an hour, I think. And, you know, of course, after about 20 minutes, I called Pacific Power and was like, you know, hey, our power's out, you know, and they took my report. And then I got the automatic callback later on, which is just like a recorded message saying, you know, that my power was now restored, and to confirm that, and to let me know that the cause of the power outage was trees. And I just thought, trees, really? It's the trees are the... And I get it. It's like, oh, trees fell on a power line or something like that. But I felt so bad for the trees. Like, they're getting blamed for this. And, you know, truly, it's how we interact with them in our landscapes. You know, where we put our power lines, how we, you know, create our homes and our communities within these established forests, in a sense, that can cause that. So... you deal a lot with some storm cleanup. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that and what people can do to protect their homes better?
Well, you know, doing all the things that, you know, keep trees vertical versus horizontal, you know, some regular maintenance, you know, throughout the upper canopy, making sure, like I've said numerous times, that you have a good root zone and a healthy healthy root zone.
It's going to hold it in the ground.
Yeah, help, you know, the roots of the tree are what anchors the tree. And you know, a lot of the things that we've already talked about as far as, you know, protecting, you know, mature established trees, planting trees in the appropriate location. I think there's two kind of subjects that you brought up there. There's one, what we can do as property owners in protecting our house drop lines and, mm-hmm. and so forth. But the majority of the power outages that we deal with are a lot of the trees that are in, you know, in state property, county property, city property, and, uh-huh. and it is financially impossible to
yeah.
maintain the vast number of trees. Whereas if you yeah. know the average homeowner has 5 to 10 trees,
yeah.
it's a lot easier than the you know hundreds of thousands yeah. of trees that the different government agencies have the responsibility of maintaining. But you know, just it's yeah. difficult, but. On the other hand, it's funny that, you know, when you get that call back and say trees are responsible for this, it's like, really, there are some extreme examples like the 07 storm that we yeah. were out of power for an extended amount of time. But really, how many times do we really lose power
yeah.
in any given year? And probably doesn't justify the removal of a lot of different trees.
Well, that's kind of an extreme reaction. And I definitely want to talk to you about that. Before I do, I want to take a quick moment to remind everybody that we're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're streaming live at coastradio.org, and you can listen on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. And if you're just joining us today, we are talking about trees with Luke Colvin. He's the owner of ArborCare Tree Specialists based here in Astoria. And so you talked a little bit about risk and perceived risk of trees versus reality of risk of trees. And it's a little bit like, you know, how many trees actually do the damage? How often does the power really go out? When you think about the course of a year, the number of hours that my house is without power is not really that many, given the number of hours that it has power. And sometimes I think there's a lot of tree I'm perceiving that there might be a lot of tree removal that's potentially unnecessary, but just to kind of make people feel better that something's happening. Am I crazy?
No, absolutely. You know, we've mentioned, you know, how you know, really how many times do we lose power and how big of an inconvenience is that?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, it's even far less of a percentage of our day-to-day lives that our homes or our property is damaged by trees or mm-hmm. failure of trees. And then even so much smaller, you know, chance of anything ever happening as far as personal injury or death. You know, is removal of hazardous trees a responsible part of urban forest management? Yes. But mm-hmm. is risk and potential risk really used sometimes inappropriately to justify or convince a homeowner to remove their tree? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't ignore the conditions and the symptoms if, mm-hmm. if you do legitimately have a tree that poses an unreasonable risk. But at the same time, it's, you know, you gotta weigh the targets. You gotta mm-hmm. weigh the potential damages. You know, really, the likelihood of something actually happening is pretty minimal, especially yeah. if it's a low target rating.
Yeah.
You know, you can have the most hazardous tree in the world, but if it's not going to hurt anything when it fails,
yeah.
it poses no hazard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just that when it happens, it's so dramatic, I think.
It is.
And people, I mean, I have a friend, our friends, who house was destroyed in the 2007 storm by trees falling on it. And it's like, whoa, okay, that's terrible. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. But, you know, that also seems like kind of an outlier. That doesn't happen very often. So for people to just kind of like, you know, move to a house and want to cut down all the trees around it just so nothing bad will ever happen.
Yeah, I think that's
To me, the benefits of trees outweigh the fear.
Absolutely. You know, the typical things that most people know as far as the value of trees is, of course, it, you know, creates or generates oxygen.
They sequester carbon. Yeah.
They store carbon. They provide habitat for wildlife. They do all these wonderful things for us, and that's every single day.
Yeah.
And once in a while, some historic event happens, and some bad things result from those weather events. And
yeah,
a lot of trees needlessly get removed in that process.
Yeah.
On the other hand, those big storms sometimes also have a benefit as far as raising awareness of wow, these bad things can happen if we don't properly value and subsequently maintain these wonderful natural assets.
So do you have a favorite tree? Like a tree you really love?
A particular tree?
Yeah, like a species or a variety.
As far as locally, Sitka spruce is just an amazing species. What they can, they're how large and how what their genetic potential is, and how they can withstand the elements is pretty incredible. And as far as that species, of course, the cathedral tree here is one of my favorite. As far as another large dominant conifer, coastal redwoods, they're amazing. God, they're not native to this area, but I'm sure most of the listeners have had an opportunity to travel down the California coast and just to go into some of those
trees.
It's you know, that each individual tree is amazing, but it's just the energy and the feeling of being in one of those forests is incredible. And then as far as a deciduous tree, I absolutely love beech trees. There's a number of different varieties that I really like, which will do well here at the coast, and a number of different magnolias. I love magnolias.
I know. We have a gorgeous tulip magnolia at our house that we inherited with the, you know, it came with the property, and it's just so amazing when it blooms, those colors against the skies.
And just the aroma is incredible.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible, too. I'm with you on all those trees. I think they're fantastic. And the spruce trees, I love, and so the biology of them, because they live in the drip line, and there's something about the way that they respirate. They're like, that they absorb the fog. Someone was explaining to me about how the Sitka spruce trees really hang into the fog and absorb moisture through that, and that they can't live at higher elevations because they need that coastal fog and the rain. Like, you don't see them high up on top of the mountains. You see them
down here. It's a very, very narrow strip where Sitka spruce can thrive. And you may be actually teaching me something about trees on this one, because what I think you're describing is there's a very few species that foliarly feed, meaning they're able to hydrate themselves by absorbing water through the foliage versus just the roots. And I didn't actually know that Sitka spruce does, and I'm gonna check.
You gotta
it out
go look
quickly.
It up. Well, look it up and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Coastal redwoods definitely foliarly feed. Western red cedar foliarly feeds, and now maybe Sitka spruce.
Well,
I'll check that out.
I will tell you this. I mean, this comes from like my work doing wildlife habitat restoration work when I first moved here, and I worked for organizations like North Coast Land Conservancy and some watershed councils, planting a lot of Sitka spruce trees in the environment, and learning about them and understanding that there's reasons why they're only found in this narrow zone. And that's why they get so stressed out when we don't have rain and we have these really hot, dry summers, because they need that constant fog as part of how they breathe. And there was a romance to that I just loved. So favorite trees. What about like least favorite trees? Are there ones that you just like, if someone calls you and says, I want you to remove my monkey puzzle tree, do you just like go, oh dear Lord, I don't want to take this job, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Monkey puzzle is one. Yeah. Just by the name,
painful trees.
It puzzles monkeys to be able to climb them. Thankfully, we don't encounter them a lot here. We actually, unfortunately, had to take down a historic one up on 8th and Grand the tree eventually succumbed to what we believe a very limited root zone, and then when they did the large utility project on 8th Street a couple years ago, what roots were there got severely damaged, and I think that was potentially the proverbial straw. But the trees that we encounter a lot more that we really don't like, English holly. It's an invasive species and very
holly.
Unfriendly.
Yeah.
The next one, it's a beautiful tree and can be used appropriately, but hawthorn are very, particularly some different species of hawthorn are very unfriendly.
How unfriendly? I mean, what do you mean by unfriendly?
When
you're climbing them, they're not fun to climb.
Just imagine climbing a tree with 1,000 syringes. Basically, depending on the species, you can have anywhere from 1-3 inch needle throughout the entire canopy.
Oh, wow.
So they flower and they can be very beautiful. I personally would never plant a hawthorn.
Oh, man. That's okay. Well, it's good to know. Good to know. So if you want to keep your arborist happy, don't plant hawthorns. So I want to just briefly touch on too, and I definitely want to make sure that people know how to contact you. So maybe let's just do that right now. So people are interested in talking to you more. They want to talk about your trees. How do they reach you, your business contact?
The traditional way, by phone. Our office number is 503-791 0853. Or if you just want to check us out and learn a little bit more about the company, you can certainly go to our website at arborcarenw.com. You can either email us or through the website or call us. Yeah. And, you know, I do a lot of I don't charge for initial visits to come out and just take a look at your property and talk about some potential tree care needs, if you have any. And
you have a pretty wide range that you work within. I mean, talk about the geographic region that you service.
Well, our main market area, particularly for residential, is Clatsop and Pacific counties and part of Tillamook County. As far as working for commercial contracts and government contracts, we do travel. For example, we've taken care of the Capitol campus up in Olympia now for over 4 years. We do all the work on the governor's mansion and areas like that. So, yeah, we do travel for larger projects. But, you know, for residential, to stay competitive, you have to have a little bit smaller of a geographic area. But all of Clatsop and Pacific counties.
I just want to also highlight, too, that Luke and his company, ArborCare Tree Specialists, they are also wonderful community members as well. You do a lot of giving back to the community. I see your banners out at the county fairgrounds. I see them at the sports fields. And you also do a wonderful drive around the holiday time. Talk just briefly about that and let people know how they can get involved.
I learned very quickly as a business owner, if you embrace your community and try to do positive things within that community, then that community in turn embraces you and your company just thrives that much more. So it's kind of a win-win.
Absolutely.
No-brainer.
Yeah.
As far as the particular food drive that you mentioned, Stuff the Truck, we annually do this since 2008 and through a lot of corporate sponsorships, we raise a pretty dramatic amount of money this year. I think it's well over $13,000 that will be given to the Clatsop County Food Bank.
That's so amazing.
And of course, you know, we do have the event at Fred Meyer's the Saturday before Thanksgiving that you can come out and bring your kids and, you know, donate cans and just really, you know, one of my favorite aspects of the actual day is families coming out and parents getting their children involved and show them how good it can feel to just do something to help somebody who is not as fortunate as you. And just seeing that process start at an early age, at this point, I've got lots of volunteers who work with this, but I just kind of stand back and watch that process and just kind of giggle.
That has got to be a good feeling. Oh, man. Look, thank you so much for what you do in the community. I mean, that is a huge thing, and that's a huge gift. And I wish that, you know, all business owners were as community-minded as you. I think it's a really great example that you set. And thanks for taking care of North Coast trees. It's a wonderful thing that you do. And thanks for the lessons today. I learned a lot, and I'm going to go back and look at my trees and think about them. I know.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, conveniently for you, we're neighbors. So.
Absolutely. I know. I get a lot of wood chips from ArborCare, I will say, and I love them. It's so great. It's a wonderful relationship to build with your local arborist. So, but I don't want people to know too much about that because I want their wood chips. I get them first. Okay.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Luke. Thanks so much for being here.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
And you've been listening to In Season here on the stations of Coast Community Radio. If you missed any part or just want to hear it again, it will be available as a podcast later on today on our website at coastradio.org. These are the stations of member-supported, listener-driven Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org.